Hello and welcome back to 20-somethings podcast. I am your host, Sarah Birch, and I'm here with a very, very special guest. He's not exactly in his 20s, but he has the youthful spirit of someone in his 20s. Please welcome to the podcast the one, the only, Steve Birch, aka my dad.
Hello there.
He's probably going to be very quiet, guys. He's a gentle spirit, but he's going to try to talk nice and loudly, aren't you, Steve?
I will try. I was in my 20s like 40 years ago. So.
Yeah, you just had your 60th birthday this year.
Yeah.
We've had a little bit of a troublesome start so far. I don't know about you guys, but I have a hard time with technology. I shouldn't say that because I brag to all my future potential employers that I'm really great with technology, but sometimes it does kick my butt. So I couldn't get the two mics to plug in at the same time. And then on top of that, one of our lovely, what do you call them? Apartment managers or something was vacuuming the floor right outside of our door in the hallway. So we had to wait for that. But hopefully the coast is clear from here on out so we can record this episode. Darla Barla is asleep right in between us, happy as a clam. What are we talking about today, Steve? This was your idea. He's been putting in the research. He's been putting in the time, the effort. He's brought his whole heart into the podcast today. I wish all of my guests were like this.
We're going to talk about the generation gap.
Dad, you have to be louder.
We're going to talk about the generation gap.
What does that mean to you?
Well, I'm in my 60s, and after living with 20-somethings in our household for the last year, I guess, I thought it'd be a good opportunity to kind of highlight some of the differences that we've seen, you know, in lifestyles in particular, and some of the challenges that you've faced, and some of the not all challenges, obviously, lots of things I really like about hanging around with 20-somethings, too, so. Hopefully there's something you like about hanging around with 60-somethings.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Makes me feel so young. No, Dad's kind of jokes that he's had a revolving door of children the last few years, which is very true. Between me and Nathan and Emily, we've been in and out and in and out because he has a two-bedroom apartment with like a spare bedroom. So he's been very generous helping out his kids when the going gets tough. I'm currently his tenant at the moment. The only reason I think he puts up with me is because I have the cutest dog in the whole world. So yeah, well, we have a few different topics we're going to cover today, like covering both like personal matters but also more societal structures and trends and patterns and how things in general in society are just very different now than they were 40 years ago when my dad was 20. So this could be for anyone in their 20s. You might relate with me, or you might be a little bit older, one of my dad's friends or something, or you might just be an old spirit and you relate more with my dad's outlook on things. But I think Dad has an overall pretty empathetic, liberal, open-minded. You're not one of those older folks who's like, damn, the young generation, they don't know anything. They're ruining the world. I feel like you feel bad for us, if nothing else.
Well, you'll have to ask Christine about that. She says, I'm turning into an old man since I turned 60, I think, with getting grumpy about this, getting grumpy about that. But no, overall, I think I have a pretty youthful perspective and try and stay youthful in terms of both my physical and emotional state as I've gotten older.
And he's a grandpa now, so you're going to actually see four generations sort of like, because Dad is a baby boomer. And then I am a zillennial, sort of. I'm, like, right on the cusp of millennial and Gen Z. I was born in 96, which is literally the cusp of both. I'm, like, straddling both sides. I'm so lost. And then there's Gen Z, which is more so, like, Nate and CC vibes, I would say. But, and then there's Gen Alpha, which is the next one, the last one. So kids who are, like, 12 years and younger type thing, I think are Generation Alpha, and that would actually be Quinn, our nephew, when he gets to be older. It's going to be interesting to see what the generation gap is between you and him, even me and him. So yeah, so just to clarify, I'm sure you guys all know this, but baby boomers are named that because of the boom of sex and pregnancies and birth that happened after World War II. It was a ginormous boom in the economy, but also within families and kind of the strong recreation of the nuclear family. And then millennials, obviously, because you're approaching the millennia when you were born. And then Gen Z, I have no idea why they're called that. And Alpha, no idea why they're called that. What are your notes again?
Well, I make lists. Right?
He's made lists.
I'm pretty organized. I took a look at some articles and I made a few notes. But even before that, when the ideas of this first started, I kind of had some general thoughts just in terms of what might be interesting as far as how we live, you know, and, you know, not having internet when I grew up and not having social media. I found that one of the biggest things is just the public versus private sort of lives that each, you know, people lead, where my generation tend to be a bit more private about things, both their successes and their failures or troubles. Mistakes. Could be health, illness, could be family situations. Mm-hmm. Obviously, where the younger generation grew up, where everything could be posted on Facebook or whatever, there tends to be a much higher prevalence of where you can know things immediately, and it leads to, it feels like, always having to be connected. Your generation probably even a bit more than ours, although I've certainly become much more attuned to being on my phone, checking things all the time, too. I think we've certainly immersed ourselves into that. But that's probably one of the biggest things I've kind of noticed is just, you know, in your podcast, obviously, of what you speak about, which is unique to you, but it's also fairly, you know, a lot of people you follow, you look at those people with sort of respect, and that's what you, how you want to operate. Where, again, I still am very much like, you're not going to know a lot about how, if I'm suffering, only one or two people close to me might know about something like that, where I feel that in a lot of cases, and we have to preface this where these are very big generalizations, right? It's like, you know, whatever I'm saying obviously is unique to me, but is I think there will be some commonalities around think trends we can see in terms of the people close to us.
Pretty much everything on this podcast is a generalization, guys, because I'm only one person who's attempting to speak for an entire decade of people. But yeah, so we are kind of working off of a little bit of an article here, just as a general guideline so that I don't go off on random tangents. So this is called, if you're interested, it's called Millennials versus Baby Boomers by FairyGodBoss.com under the career topics subset. No, I feel like I'm a little bit of an old soul in some ways, so I definitely can understand a lot of the frustrations with Gen Z and millennials and the way we live. But I also think people are, you're just a victim to your circumstances, you know, the society you live in, the way the world is. Like, we didn't ask to be born into this high tech social media internet realm. It's just the way the world went, and it's not going back anytime soon. So I think people need to take a certain amount of culpability and responsibility for their own health and wellness and lifestyle. But I also think a lot of it was probably just ingrained in us from a young age, and it's hard to, I don't know, it's hard to even imagine. Like, I did live a few years before the internet, for sure, or at least there was dial-up internet when I was a kid, but I don't remember, like, really spending chunks of time on the internet till I was maybe 13 or 14, and that's when I started going on YouTube and Facebook, and watching dance videos was pretty much all I was doing on there. And then once I got into high school, it became more intense, and I was comparing myself to other girls and stuff, or YouTubers. And then university became like a competition of like, well, I need to travel to more countries so that I can show off on my Instagram that I traveled to this many countries. And I literally had the stark realization that I was only living via social media, and then if I wasn't documenting things, they weren't as special or not as relevant in my life. And now I am kind of in a place in my mid-20s where I'm just trying to use social media to create and to put myself out there in terms of an artistic point of view and, like, build my brand. Like, I'm not using it just to kill time. I mean, I guess I do sometimes, but I'm trying to break out of the being a mindless consumer, just scrolling, and not really getting anything out of it. I'm like, if I'm going to spend hours on this platform, I'd rather be putting content out there and actually, like, having a voice. And it's scary at times to put yourself out there on the internet, and I don't really hold anything back. Yeah, so that's sort of my mentality, but I definitely have received some fear and hesitation from my mom and my dad at times, and just older people in my life, aunts and uncles and stuff, who are like, oh, I can't believe you said that, or maybe you shouldn't talk about that, or what will people think? And it's all like in good spirits, or what's the word? It's all good intentioned. Like, it's not them trying to stifle my creativity or anything, but I genuinely do think that's a moment of a generational gap, because all of my friends who are my age or a little bit older, a little bit younger, are like, they don't even blink. They don't even think twice when I talk about my entire love life. They're like, oh yeah, that was a great episode. Like, because everybody talks about their dates, their job interviews, their this, their that on TikTok, on Twitter, on Instagram, like, because people like stories and they like crazy stories and they like hearing about other people's chaotic messes. It's like, I don't know if it's healthy or not, but it's just sort of the way it is. So I'm like, if this is the only way that I can get people to be interested in my podcast so that I can also talk about other more important things, then I'm willing to do a bit of both. Like, I'm willing to exploit myself a little bit in order to get the traction. And that's just how I feel. But I do know people my age who are super, super private.
Yeah, I think that goes a bit more to the generation gap. I mean, I look at my friends or people around my age are posting probably almost as much on social media, but it'll be a little bit about different things because you're going to be at a different phase of life than a 20-something will be, right? So it might be pictures of travel or
your grandkids
or
Darla.
A walk with Darla, which mm-hmm. is my favorite pastime now.
Yes.
You know, and again, it goes back to that generation, how we grew up. So we're no better or worse. We're posting probably just a bit as much, but we've also lived a life where we're not going to be as enamored with whatever it is that a 20-something year old is. But, you know, having you post lots of pictures when you travel. It's going to be things that you're proud of, right?
Yeah.
Every time. But I think as we grew up, you know, each generation grows up with, you grew up with two fairly liberal parents.
Yeah.
You know, we did, went to church and we did a lot of these things you're supposed to do, but we're very, quite open. You guys run around naked around the house and we were pretty liberal. But, you know, my generation, you couldn't do that. And you grew up, you didn't talk about sex. You didn't talk about, divorces and those sort of things. And millennials actually have the highest divorce rate of any, because you started to get into this each subsequent age group. You know, things became more open, more liberal, and whatever. And I guess the other thing I kind of thought about, which is, I don't know if it's on here or not, but I just thought about the adversity that your generation faces, right? Compared to my generation. Now, having said that, no one has it easy.
Yeah.
Like, each generation grew up with wars. phone's ringing. Hi, Brian, you're calling me. I'll call you back. You know, each generation grew up with stuff. Like, no one just had it that easy. But I do think, in terms of the baby boomers came into it at a time where there was
economic prosperity,
wealth, growth, governments are in a good place, and all. And now it's just, there's just seems so much divisiveness, so much division,
yeah.
Especially politics, economy. Look, you know, climate change is something that threatens all of us, which we didn't really deal with, or if we did, we thought, they can deal with it. And I think that's another thing, baby boomers, you know, I might get in some trouble for this, but a lot of it is, well, that's their problem. They can,
yeah.
We've kind of done our part. We're at a point now where we're okay. But yet there's lots of people that aren't, and sometimes our kids aren't okay, right? So you're still dealing with that sort of thing. But I think that's a big thing I've noticed in terms of the level of adversity, and you've added COVID into it. Not that that's been easy on me or anybody,
mm-hmm.
but I look at you guys that, you know, are also facing with trying to figure out a lot of stuff, and then you add in a big chunk of that COVID, which took some mm-hmm. of your youth away.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I'm old, man. I've lived my life. If I lose a little bit, that's not great, but it's like, I'm okay. Where it's been devastating for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'll get over it. Nothing lasts forever. I truly believe that, because that's kind of the Buddha in me. But, you know, nothing's permanent. And things will get better. But nevertheless, at the time, it does seem like there's a lot of stuff happening for your generation, which is big stuff.
Yeah. And I think we do, I totally agree. And I think we do get like a little bit of a bad rap in terms of we're lazy, we don't know what we want to do, we have no direction. But I think what a lot of people forget, you know, older people who maybe are frustrated with people in my generation who can't choose a direct career path or can't choose a boyfriend or can't figure out if they want kids or not or whatever, is like we grew up exposed to infinite options, like through the internet, like through blogs and movies and vlogs and Instagrams and people. You're seeing people who chose a million different pathways and they all look glamorous because you're seeing it through the internet. So, you know, you're seeing a couple who moved to Bali and live there, and you're seeing a person who like got this corporate job and lives in this high rise in Manhattan, and you're seeing people who have 12 kids and are like family goals, and you're seeing it all, and it all seems appealing in a way, right? Because you're seeing the highlights, so to speak. And I don't ever want to settle for one thing, so I find myself feeling options paralysis a little bit, which I want to talk about in another episode. But it's like the feeling of having too many options and too many things at your fingertips. Our generation could literally go anywhere, do anything. Like, there's so many different ways to travel now. I would assume like it's a little bit more simple to probably get a visa, and like so many people go and do a year abroad or a few years abroad, and there's resources online on how to do these things. And then you can work from home or you can work on the road when you travel. And it's just like there's no concrete path to take like there was maybe when you were growing up, of like find a job, have a family, you know, save for retirement, do the thing, go on a trip maybe once a year, you know, if you can afford it type thing. And in some ways I envy people my age who still do have that sort of traditional mindset of that's the life they want, because I'm like, what must it have been like to know exactly what you want to do when you were 18 years old? Like, and my sister's a little bit like that. I mean, she has her own struggles and stuff. Her life's not perfect, but she always knew she wanted to be a teacher, and she knew how to get there, and she just made it happen for herself, and she's building this career and building this family, and that's exactly what she wanted though. So I'm glad that she's manifesting that for herself. But you know, I feel still a little bit unsure. I'm starting to get a better sense of what my purpose is and what I want to do as I get older, but I'm still a little unsure. And I don't ever want to sacrifice one potential awesome opportunity for another. And so I get lost in the middle. And I know a lot of people who are the same way. And it's not necessarily laziness. It's just this feeling of not wanting to settle. And maybe we saw a lot of our parents settle potentially, or and saw a little bit of resentment from our parents who like chose a job they didn't love, or chose a wife or a husband they didn't actually have a very successful marriage with, and they kind of rushed into things, and then we saw that kind of crash and burn. But I think maybe the pendulum has swung a little too far the other way, where we can't make a decision to save our lives. Yeah, I understand the frustrations, but our generation also has, I think, some unfair stereotypes and frustrations towards boomers. And you'll hear people say all the time, like, oh, those damn boomers, or, oh, you know, there's another boomer saying something racist or whatever. Like, we definitely don't give you guys a lot of grace either, in terms of growing up in a different time, different age, different societal norms.
No, actually, that's a good point around the options in particular, because I think when we grew up, the expectations just seemed, like you said, you go to school, you get an education, depending on your family, or the expectation to get grade 12, then you go out and work, or you get a university college education, then you go get the job, you start the family, all the rest of it. And I certainly bought into that. I didn't. We joked, and we watched that show with Chris D'Elia about the
I guess guy.
That was the I guess guy, where he just went along with, you know, he gives the example of his fiance planning the wedding. He's like, I guess. And I was exactly that guy. And that's no slight on anybody, that's on me. But that was a lot of that probably goes to societal, is that I gotta go get a job, you know, whatever it happens to be, because I want to get out of the house and I want to do my thing, I want to buy my car. And I was fairly materialistic when I was younger, and you know, I wanted to get the car, I wanted the, you know, this and that, even when I had kids. But I think your generation, even though you're younger, from what I see with some of my children and people, like, it's a lot of it is there is a desire for more than just getting that job and
the security,
and you know, same thing with finances. It's like, you know, your mom and I were both pretty much like, you know, we want a secure job, and we want to put money away so the kids will have money for university. We want to put money away for our retirement. Here we are. It's worked for us because we're both retired and, you know, we're doing okay. But that was kind of the expectation, right? Where you guys look at that, you're probably most your age. I don't think any of our kids we know of are really putting, unless you have pensions, are really putting it away for retirement, even thinking that way, because you're just trying to, you know, manage day to day or whatever. So I think that's a good point in terms of things are much easier. I think you also grew up with a lot of affluent parents, right? A lot of the parents of the baby boomers were, may not be rich, but they were wealthy in a lot of ways in terms of at least having the basics in life, having a house and all that, where for a lot of you looking at that, I can think of some of you, you're like, I'm never gonna, it feels like I'm never gonna attain that, or it's so hard to attain that. And you look at how expensive things are, and you know, we're dealing with looking at a couple of the kids with trying to find their own place to rent. It's like how do you do that? It's so expensive, right? With us, like, maybe we had the same issues, but it didn't seem that hard. So not to take a whole lot of credit away, because I mean, not that I enjoyed my job, okay, but I stuck with the same job for 30 something years. A lot of my family did that because you had that pot at the end of the rainbow, and I don't think a lot of your generation think you're more what they call it, live in the moment gratification to get what you want, right? So where I certainly bought into that, you know, working in a government job as well, you have a pension at the end of the job, so you're going to stick with it to get to that end goal. But a lot of people, how many people do we know that get to retirement and have health issues and struggles or whatever? So there's a lot of that. I really, especially with someone like you, who's so creative, Sarah, and traveled and all that, like, I really respect that. You don't want to see it get eroded because of these other issues.
But I also, like, don't want to get to a certain point in my life where I want to have kids or start a family and I have, like, no security, no safety net, like, no... You know, so I am aware of, I'm towing that line right now, that balancing act of like not wanting to fully give up my youth and my freedom, but also not wanting to, because unfortunately women have a little bit of different circumstances in their late 20s, early 30s than men do. Like, men can afford biologically to mess around a little longer and have fun a little longer and whatever. And women, if you want to carry your own child or whatever, then sometimes you do have to kind of settle down a little earlier. So I'm still young and I still have time, but that is something that creeps into my mind a bit. And so I'm trying to kind of do the impossible right now and like find a creative career where I can like be myself and express myself, but also make a sustainable living. But I don't even know what that looks like anymore with the cost of groceries and gas and rent. It's like, even if I did make a really good income for my age, it still wouldn't mean that much with the price of everything right now. Like, I'm sure I could live month to month and I could make do, but I don't know if I'd be able to save for a house or save for a big trip or whatever it is. And so I think it's hard for our generation to find the motivation to work sometimes in, let's say, a 9-to-5 or like a office job or whatever, because it's like, what, like Dad said, what am I getting out of this? Like, I'm not going to be, even if I do work the 40 hours a week, however many weeks a year, I'm not going to be able to afford a nice trip for myself. I'm not going to be able to afford to upgrade my car. I'm not going to be able to afford to buy a house. And I do think we have a little bit more of that YOLO mentality, like, you only live once, live in the moment. I think our generation's a lot more existential in certain ways than yours. Like, I think at least me and a lot of my friends are like very, very spiritual people, and we're always looking into the meaning of things and the grander scope of life and why are we truly on this planet? Like, is it just to run ourselves into the ground and make money and then die and blah, blah, blah. And I think that that's wicked that people are opening their consciousness. But again, like, it really puts everything into question about work and savings, and you could die any day. Like, why am I putting in all that overtime to save money when I could be spending that money and going on a trip or whatever it may be? So we definitely like instant gratification. We definitely like having rewards and things to look forward to. So being frugal and being money wise is not, at least for me and my friends, it's not always the main priority. Sometimes it's more so having fun, having experiences, making memories. And I notice, at least recently, a lot of people, Gen Z and millennials, are really into like manifestation, meditation, and like mental health and wellness more so than just like, there's a really interesting part in this article where they talk about health, and it says essentially like boomers are more literal about these type of things. Like if you're sick, it means you like have a cough or have a flu. Whereas we could be like, she's sick, he's sick. Like we could be talking like mentally, spiritually, emotionally. Like wellness is way more than just how many vitamins you take and like what your immune system's like. Like people, just whatever, like whatever it may be, we're, I think, a little bit more in tune with all of our well-being, not just like, oh, I got to push through this shift. And it drives Amanda crazy because Amanda's literally a boomer at heart. Love you, girl. Like, and she's proud of it. Like she can't stand how much, like she gets it and she's sympathetic, but she's like, this generation cannot work. Like you guys can't make it through one day of work without having like, you know, a panic attack or something. Like you can't give anyone criticism. You can't give anyone feedback.
Yeah.
And I am literally that person though, like who will have a panic attack at my desk if you like call me out on something. So because our whole life is a performance now, like it look like literally social media is you performing for everyone else. We also grew up in like the Gold Star Participation Award era where our entire lives it was good enough to just be okay. You didn't have to be the best. Like, so for us to get criticism and hear that we're not doing a good job is news to us because we are a little entitled, I will say. And we do kind of feel like even if we did a crap job, I should get something. I should at least get a donut out of this. Like I should get something.
That's a good word that I know I've used, but this entitled is a good word. And I mean, I think the baby boomers have to take some blame for that. I don't know if blame's the right word, because that's kind of the way it rolled. Like most of you grew up with parents that had stuff in terms you didn't lack for anything. You may not have been rich or whatever, but so, you know, I wondered how much that plays with your psyche in terms of growing up in a very secure environment where you have everything. All of a sudden now you have to go out on your own and things are tougher in terms of, or the expectations are, like if we grew up and we were out of the house, like we could go live with our parents for a little while, but it was just very much looked upon like you're lame. And you know, I saw an article today, I think I was telling you about, was just how prevalent it is now for millennials to be living at home. It's something by choice. Oh, I can stay at home and, you know, I can save some money and I can go on trips, I can do my car, or I can save for a house, which all makes sense for a short period of time, but it seems to be much more accepted. And some of the parents probably are fine with that and maybe others aren't. But I think, you know, the other thing I thought when you were speaking about the entitlement was just the authority, you know, like how the younger generation would look at authority versus how mine did. So more acceptance back then of, you know, organized religion and church. Like we didn't even know what meditation was, you know, growing up, or mindfulness. I didn't know. You heard the odd person after they got university would go to Europe and do a little tour, but it was so strange. Right now here, like all of our kids have done traveling, you know, mm-hmm. in their 20s, where I really didn't travel till I was like 50. Mm-hmm. Right, but that was part of that. You work your life, you get to the end, you hopefully have enough money and you don't die, that you can then do that stuff you wanted to do.
That's so risky though.
Where your generation's like, well, I should be able to do that now because my parents do it when they're 40s or 50s. They have the money, why can't I do it now? And mm-hmm. you're expecting you can have all that stuff, where in my generation it was, you didn't expect that. You expected you had to go work and you got to pay your dues, is kind of how I put a lot of it, for whatever it happens to be. And you know, a lot of the stuff, even the meditation and mindfulness, starts to come by light, I think, in some ways, by my generation getting to that middle age and going, now what? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, I picked up mindfulness and meditation out of anxiety and stress as a means to help alleviate that. And it's like an epidemic worldwide, but for your generation in particular, part of it's because you're so outspoken about it. Some of it is you have Bell Let's Talk, you have a lot of awareness, employers are more aware of it. But like, I don't think it means there wasn't anxiety in my generation. It just wasn't you just didn't talk about it, or you just toughed it out, right? So that's not necessarily a good thing either, but I think it goes back to those expectations, and we didn't question as much, probably. Certainly, I'm thinking more when I grew up. You know, like I went to church, and that was a thing to do, and didn't question it until I was older. Mm-hmm. Your employer was your employer. You did what your boss said. You did what your doctor said.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think another part of that, just to kind of get into the work circumstances, like how people like to work in my generation versus in the baby boomer generation, is like, I think a lot of us would just rather work for ourselves. I mean, not only are there more avenues to make income now, whether it be on social media or Etsy or Amazon, like there's just ways for everyday people to make decent money online or whatever. But I think also, like, I was talking to my friend Kieran about this, and we just completely related because she has a really great job. But she was saying how... Bless you. he sneezed on it, so it means it's true. But she was saying, like, she's just like, I'm so kind of unmotivated at work lately because, like, I'm just doing all this work and punching in all this time for, like, someone else to benefit and someone else to profit. Like, I get nothing out of this. Like, I don't, it doesn't help your quote-unquote, like, personal brand at all. And not everybody wants that, like, but... I completely relate. I'm like, I hate the idea of, like, I could be pouring 8 hours a day into my podcast, into my YouTube videos, into whatever, my health, my wellness, like, and instead I'm giving this much time a day to make some other big business a lot of money or whatever. And that's just, like, I think the frustrating thing with capitalism and just, like, this corporate greed that my generation's, like, really against for the most part. Capitalism really benefited the boomers a lot, and I don't know if it's, like, benefiting my generation as much as you might think, and everything shifting to being online anyway. And it's interesting, I think this article says that millennials or Gen Z will go into a job not at all with the mentality of, I'm going to stay here the rest of my career. It's like, oh, I hope I can get what I can get out of this, and on to the next thing, on to the next better thing. And that doesn't necessarily mean more money. That could be, like, a better work environment, more flexibility, more vacation days. Like, we're looking at the whole picture. Like, what's the vibe of the office? Like, is there a good mix of representation of people at the office? Or is it, like, whitewashed and a bunch of old men? Or, like, things could change in the blink of an eye, and your employer, unfortunately, is not obligated to safeguard your position. So in some ways, I think we're all aware of that. And it's like, we're just a little bit more, instead of looking out for the man, we're like, I'm going to put myself first and, you know, the business can come second, but I'm going to keep one foot out the door just in case. And you better meet my needs and let me work from home or I'm going to quit, type thing. And working from home is a huge change for my generation, especially since COVID. We, like, expect that now and much prefer it. Or if anything, I think a hybrid work scenario would be really ideal for people because, you know, I think socialization is still good. Getting out of the house 5 days a week in a stuffy office is not ideal, which is, I think, frustrating a lot of older employers who want to just hire people to come into the building, and people do not want to come into the building.
Well, that's the old man in us, because there's still a lot of, you know, baby boomers are probably in those positions of authority. So when we grew up, that obviously wasn't even an option, you know, to have remote work and that kind of creativity. So I think that's probably, you know, overall it's a good thing. But one thing the article kind of alludes to in terms of the difference is, you know, my generation, and I benefited from this in a 30-something year career, a lot of that progression was based on experience and just being there. I was nothing special. I went up, you know, into management and supervising those type of leadership types of positions, not because I was the smartest person, whatever, because I was reliable and I was consistent and I'd been around long enough. So I looked at my workplace when I left, and you still had a lot of people sort of my age, 50s and the 60s, that were in those positions for quite a while because they're loyal, they stayed, and they're also, you know, in some cases we have pensions at the end or whatever. And they had the younger people coming in, which was great, because typically we're quite a, you know, government typically had been a fairly older workforce. And the younger people coming in, and they would get these positions that in my generation, you know, 10 years ago, but how come I'm not getting that? I've been here the longest. Well, I think that the new generation is like, who cares? Like, if you're not the best for the position, you're not creative, whatever. I think that's probably a good thing to come out of it, is that, you know, employers or whatever, beginning to recognize who's the best for it, who's the most creative, who's the most vibrant, versus maybe who's been there the longest. I mean, that's whether it's right or wrong, people always say, well, I should have had that position. But it's one thing I've certainly noticed, and I can see that happening again. That sort of goes back to the whole loyalty, trust and authority or whatever, versus the questioning and the desire for more from your generation, I think.
Yeah, and another thing I would think is solitary work versus group work. I personally hate, I don't know, I shouldn't say that. I feel like once I'm with people, I'm like bopping around and having fun and thriving, but I get massive anxiety at the thought of like a large group meeting, or like, I don't even know, whether it be like a check-in with my bosses to talk about my work performance. Like, I literally rather throw myself off a cliff. Like, that is my worst nightmare. And that's just my anxiety. Like, I can't handle that stuff, but I'm on like an extreme spectrum with that, and I am trying to get better. But I think, like, because a lot of people are working from home, or they're starting their own small businesses, or they're consulting, or they're doing freelance, in my generation, like, you're just, it just is preferable or just more comfortable to work alone, and to, and if you do have to call with someone, you just like call them on the phone or Skype them or Zoom. And I think, from what this article says anyway, like, the boomers don't understand that, because growing up in the workforce, they were expected not only to be there, but to be collaborating, communicating with each other, like, you know, building that team morale or whatever. And they are firm believers in like, I can't get your energy unless I see you in person and meet you in person and feel your firm handshake and yada, 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 like, see how you dress and see if you have tattoos and all that. And now it's like, oh, I can get your vibe through a 5-minute Zoom call type thing. And I think you kind of can. I don't know. Or you can just check out someone's Instagram and see what they're about. I do still agree that in person is a better way to vibe with someone in different scenarios, like dating, workforce, whatever it may be.
That's what I was thinking. I was wondering if you met, as you're talking about that, whether how much of that might go back to you. You talked about working on your own. You've also talked about not wanting to get feedback or whatever, or being more sensitive or what, you know, your generation, and I experienced this at work, you know, over the evolution over the last 10 years around whatever you want to use, politically correct, awareness towards all sorts of very, and this is not a criticism, right? A lot of valid things around diversity and diversity groups and sensitive, but there's like, you can't say anything to anybody anymore, right? Where we didn't grow up with that. Like, you got feedback, you needed to listen to it, and you moved ahead or whatever, right? And, you know, that's where unions came in many years ago to try and alleviate that. But now I think that could be part of it. It's just your group, your age group is, I don't know if sensitive is even the right word, but certainly it's...
conflict averse.
There's a lot of that because you haven't had to really deal with a lot of that, because these issues have been rightfully so made aware of to people, right? So it's like you have to be very sensitive where we...
which I don't think is a bad thing. I think there's something to be said about a gentle delivery of whatever it may be. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing that boomers or just people in general are being a little bit more aware of what they're saying to people and how they're saying and the damage it might cause, not necessarily in the workplace because work is work, but just in general in life. Like, people used to like, oh, if I hurt their feelings, that's on them, they're too soft or whatever. And now I do think in some ways it's gone a little too far in the other direction, because even on this podcast or on my YouTube channel, I find myself constantly thinking in the back of my head, is that going to offend somebody? Is that going to offend somebody? And when I'm editing, I like cut out a bunch of stuff all the time that I'm like, I really personally don't think this is offensive, but who knows who I might offend. So I'm just going to cut it out. And I'm like censoring myself with myself. So it's, of course, you're going to censor yourself with other people. So I do think it's gotten a little too far to the point where people don't feel like they can express themselves at all. But I also think there has been some benefits to people getting called out for like being nasty with the way they speak or the way they say things. And I'm always about the compliment sandwich. Like, I don't know. I teach Gen Z, who is even more sensitive, I think, than my generation. And I teach them dance every week. And I have to give them feedback and criticism because that's literally my job. And I have just learned that you kind of have to take like a lighthearted, or I'll just crack a joke and be like, you know, Stephanie, your arms look like T-Rex arms or whatever. And I'm like basically telling her arms look ugly, but I'm saying it in like a funny way and she'll just giggle and she won't feel like, but again, some people would disagree with me and be like, just be direct. But I don't know. I've been sat down by employers in like a dark room, just me and them. And they're like, okay, there's something serious I need to talk to you about. Like, you made a typo or whatever it is. And you feel like you're in jail, like in an interrogation. And they make it, and it's like, I think they're just trying to create a private space and they don't want to do it in front of other people and la, la, la. And I get the intention, but sometimes I'm like, I don't know. And, but then you can't please everybody. But I think part of being a good leader or a good boss is to like understand how each of your employees functions. And you don't need to use the exact same process on each of them. Like maybe one of them can handle tough love and one of them can, and that's okay. And in life in general, like you shouldn't speak bluntly to everybody because not everybody can handle it. And that's just the truth of it. I can't handle being spoken to extremely bluntly. I don't like it. I'll cry. I'll shut down. I will literally hold a grudge against you for the rest of time. Like I have some bosses in the past who I cannot stand because they said one or two very mean things to me. And it's like, okay, they're in my naughty book. Like, I literally am so sensitive with that stuff.
But that's not new. I mean, that's, I think what's new is the, as you meant, the prevalence of how many different issues you're going to deal with. I mean, that's always, no one likes to get called out. Where I know I've in the past have, and you feel crappy, but it wasn't, you know, that's just part of your personality of being sensitive or whatever. But I think, you know, now you're like, you know, at my former workplace, managing was more about just managing people. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't the operation side or whatever. It's like, how do we keep mm-hmm. people engaged? Mm-hmm. How do we make sure there's proper diversity and all that, right? So, and whatever it happens to be, Black Lives Matter, every life, like they're all great and they deserve to have a place and they deserve to be brought out because the world's a better place for that. Unfortunately, you know, bad things have happened to bring that to light and it should have been, but we didn't, you know. And again, it goes back to the social media and what, everybody has a voice. So I just felt like even at work, it's like there was a diversity email like 3 times a day or whatever. It's like, I'm on board, man. I don't need to hear that all so yeah. much all the time. And it's the same thing now with social media. So everybody has a strong voice and then you voice it and someone will come back and there's where the divisiveness comes in. Where in the past is like you listen to, you know, you watch a TV, you heard about a new subject and then you might have your conversations, your little group, but you didn't go on Facebook. And, and so that's where I think that's causes maybe people to be gun shy or to be overly brave. They can go behind a computer and say whatever they want. Right? So that's another problem we're seeing with, big problem. You know, the Trump people and other, all these people that have a voice
it's not just them, it's everyone. People who are hyper liberal are just as bad online, trust me. Like, and then when you go into something already feeling on edge and already feeling like you've done something wrong, and literally the employers are doing nothing wrong. I'm not putting blame on the employers, but that's just, like Dad said, there is an epidemic in this world right now of depression and anxiety. Like, people are not okay. People are on edge, hating themselves, like not functioning in this world very well at the moment. And I think a ton of that is to do with social media and like being stagnant, not getting so much exercise, like there's a whole bunch of things.
I think so, because you can't, there hasn't been an evolution in our bodies in the, you know, 10 or 20 years to all of a sudden where I've been medicated for anxiety as well in the past or whatever, but it was brought on by a myriad of all sorts of things coming together that were fairly big life things, but it's not like everybody, even young, and, you know, so I don't think we've been weakened by evolution over that period of time. I think it's just the onslaught of social media, expectations, stressors, mm-hmm. you know, parents divorcing. There's all sorts of stuff that's come on that has caused, and now, you know, and of course, the medical system, this is not, I'm not saying medication isn't great, but that's the first thing. To, yeah. Okay, let's put them on medication as opposed to looking at the root of what that problem is, which it would be a whole new podcast with someone who knows more about that than me. But it's, you know, I think you can look back at just the changes of what we're talking about here generationally, and you'll see probably why people are so anxious. There's just, you know, so much going on. And not to say that we aren't, I suffer from anxiety as much as the next person, but what mine is when I look at it objectively is not life-threatening and not, you know, worried about climate change or getting a job or paying rent.
Do you find that you're often, like, people in your generation were maybe more anxious because of circumstances, and it was more like, you know, you'd be anxious for a few months and then it would ease off or whatever? Because I feel like my generation is just anxious literally 24/7, like, for no rhyme or reason. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of reasons, but we can't necessarily identify those. Like, I wake up in the morning anxious. Like, I go to bed at night anxious. Like, and my medication and stuff has helped, and it doesn't matter whether things are going really good for me or really bad for me. I mean, obviously that alters the severity of it, but, like, I'm just anxious all the time, and I know a lot of other people feel the same way. I imagine it has a lot to do with screen time, but also probably, like, the type of foods we're eating and how many, like, preservatives are in it. And a lot of people in my generation are, like, sitting a lot more and not getting as much endorphins through exercising and walking. And my generation, and more so Gen Z with TikTok and stuff, I've noticed, this is another episode I want to do, like, in more depth, but we really romanticize everything, but especially, like, sadness and anxiety. Like, you would not believe the amount of, like, trends and memes and things that are all around being sad, like sad girl era or, like, sad girl makeup. Like, people do specific makeup looks that make it look like they've been crying, or, like, sad music, or people, like, talking about their heartbreaks online, and, like, it's just depressing. Like, but, you know, all these pretty girls online are talking about how sad they are, and it's almost glamorizes it. And then we really got a problem. Like, but then there's no solutions. Like, yes, you can be like, Belle, let's talk. Talk to someone, you know, go outside. But, like, at the end of the day, I feel like we need real, legitimate solutions for people to feel better, like an entire reset culturally or medically or something, like whether it be free therapy for everybody or I don't know.
Well, I suspect, like, we had, I don't know if it was really called anxiety. Like, when I was thinking of when I was a young parent or growing up, and we got to be careful not to transpose our own personal anxieties onto our generations. Same with you. You might be riddled with anxiety, but, you know, it's not...
I'm a voice for the people.
Yeah, so... But overall, I think when you even look at my family, like, most of my family, I can have had anxieties. We tend to worry about money, even if there's not a huge worry about money. We worry about money. So part of that anxieties might just be the differences in what the generations want. So when my job security... Hence, my security in general was hinged a lot on that. There was lots of talks about being in government, there could be layoffs or whatever. That's when I would get anxious. Now, you're on social media 24/7. I suspect you get anxious by any post you see that threatens the things that are important to you, whether it's your autonomy or how expensive things, climate change or whatever. So, I think just the word, it's become...
And there's no escaping it.
It's a legitimate thing. The anxiety, no doubt, is legitimate and whatever. And we called it worry, probably. We didn't call it anxiety as much. And we didn't have, like... climate change, but we always had issues with economies, and so there's always been that. But how it's been handled and how upfront it is and how much daily stuff there is and how visible it is probably been the biggest thing, because, like I said, I don't think our brains have changed overnight in terms of how we handle it. It's probably just exposure more than anything.
Yeah, I definitely think we've been
overexposed for sure.
But social media, we're exposed to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. I know that it's through online, but it's not necessarily, because people are posting photos, TikToks, reels, their voice. You can hear their voice. You can hear their opinion. You can read their words. You can see their relationships. You're getting like way too many images, way too many voices, way too many opinions, and way too many potential comparisons. Our actual brain cannot function with that many. Like, no. We go into overdrive and we go into like self-destruct mode. It's just an interesting thing to think about.
Maybe need a podcast on anxiety.
Not
alone, but well, I think, you know,
I hope this podcast helps with people's anxiety a little bit, and it may give some
perspectives in terms of like how often are you, well, and maybe this is severity, are you anxious when you're out on a nature walk with Darla?
I'm still anxious.
Well, like
if I'm working out,
like as soon as I'm out in nature, I can be anxious and maybe it doesn't disappear,
yeah.
But absolutely. So that's the other thing. People are constantly exposed to electronics and whatever. And when you are, and it could be at work, you know, you're in front of a screen but I would suspect when people move their bodies and they get out in nature and go back to that base level of being a human, like I personally find that is... kind of a happy place where it's just
for sure. And I realize that I like don't help my own case by constantly like listening to true crime podcasts and stuff, although for some reason that does calm me a little bit, because I don't know, like it reminds me that I can't complain about my life, and like
not dead.
Well, because I don't have like a psycho abusive husband who's like hunting me down and trying to kill me, but also like I'm currently listening to a survival story right now, and it's like so inspirational and so fascinating. So but anyway, I don't think that helps with my anxiety, but also I often bring my phone out on the walk with me or my camera out or something, and I'm still plugged in. So that's something I'm genuinely trying to be better at, is like leaving my phone at home, whether it be for a walk or just to like run to the store, which I honestly feel like is a risk, because it's not that I don't know how to function without a phone, but I feel unsafe without my phone. Like, what if my car breaks down? What if someone's following behind me? Like, I want to be able to have my phone on me, but when it's on me, I always go on it. It's like, I can't not pay attention to it. I always am like, oh, let me just check my messages quickly or whatever. So that's what I would recommend to people. If you're just take little mini breaks away from your phone.
Get outside. When guys, get outside, hold your lady's hand on a walk. Open the door for her when you get to the car.
I don't have a lot of guys who listen to this.
That's what my dad taught me, and the ladies will be forever grateful to you.
Yes, open the car. And
there's just lots of things. Like, there's certain things in life. I guess the moral of this story, whether you're a boomer or a millennial or an alpha or somewhere else in between, you are going to face things that are out of your control, stressors, circumstances, global issues. Like, I am not going to cure anxiety overnight. I'm not going to cure cancer overnight, but I can look out for me and I can look out for my friends, and I can do my part, which I try to do with this podcast, to like make some sort of positive impact or influence, which makes me feel good and actually does lessen my anxiety. A lot of people would probably think putting myself out there as much as I do on this podcast would amplify my anxiety, but for some reason it makes me feel very whole and fulfilled, because I feel like I'm actually doing something good and I'm like connecting with people on a deep level. And so it's quite liberating to me in that way. But just take care of yourself and the things you can control, tackle those first. You know, whether it be, okay, I'm going to try to get 15 minutes of exercise in. Okay, I'm going to try to go on one walk a day. I'm going to try to put my phone away for half an hour, whatever it be. But things you can't control, just try to step back and not take everything so personally or catastrophize everything. Baby steps, one day at a time. We'll all get through this together, and there's always going to be disparities between different generations. I'm sure there were, you know, 100 years ago, 300 years ago, 500 years ago, there's always going to be like the stuffy older person and the young rebellious person who don't see eye to eye, but we all have a lot more in common than we all realize. And a huge part of that is just compassion and patience and being willing to give people the benefit of the doubt, hear them out. So thanks to all the boomers out there for all you've done to pave the way for us, even though you've set us up for total failure.
Hey, you're welcome. On behalf of all baby boomers.
And what do you have to thank us for?
Well, for you personally, I think you inspire me just with how creative you are and how brave you can be, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's probably the one thing is it's people, you know, they've also brought to light. I think the one thing the article even mentions is just, and even working with younger people or whatever, is that they aren't afraid to bring issues to light where we might have buried them or just said, well, it's the way it is or whatever. Now you tend to have a lot more activism around, you know, the Theda Grundbergs and all the rest of it, even mm-hmm. locally, lots of people, you know, women's rights. There's all sorts of great things, I think, that are they're much more passionate about. And we should all have the kind of problems Darla has.
I know, she's sound asleep on her back, spread out. We should probably take her on a walk soon. So we can wrap it up there. That was a great episode. That's probably one of my longest ones I've ever done, I would think. So
have me on more often.
I will. I'll have Steve on more often. And I think he's hopefully going to start a creative project of his own soon, maybe a blog or something. So if he ends up doing that, we will for sure promote it on here to my 5 listeners. but yes, thank you, Dad, so much. You're a great inspiration to me. And you were a good, I think we were both relatively good representations for our generations, our respective generations, even though, yeah, like Dad said, we're not trying to put words into your mouth, but you're not here to speak, so I will do that for you. All right, guys, don't forget to follow me on all socials. Everything should be linked below, YouTube, Instagram, all that stuff. And please follow the podcast if you're not. It's just one little click and it would make a big difference to me. And if you liked this episode or any of my other ones, share it with a friend and pass along the good word. And slowly we will continue to build this community and have these awesome conversations that will hopefully make the world a less divisive place. All right. Toodaloo. Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You sound like Eeyore.
Well, I'm old.